on this edition of our Cubs Recap Podcast, the presentation of our Recap YouTube channel, and available audio only everywhere you get your favorite podcast. My partner Gordon Whitmire and I discuss the latest goings on with the Chicago Cubs, and what do you do with Kyle Hendricks if he's ready to go back to the rotation? Who goes to the bullpen? Welcome into another edition of our Cubs Recap Podcast, presentation of our Recap YouTube channel, and available audio only everywhere you get your favorite podcast with my guy, my partner, Gordon Whitmire. I'm David Kaplan. Let's get right into it, Gordon. The Cubs starting pitching since April 19th has a 2.11 ERA. That is the best in all of baseball. That same span, their bullpen's been lousy. So, man. How do you fix this? Because Kyle Hendricks, we'll get to that in a minute, has thrown well in the minors. He's ready to come back. Do you move Ben Brown into like a seventh, eighth inning role, hoping to move him to the ninth inning? Hector Neris walks too many guys. Where do you want to start?
Kyle Hendricks is a great place to start. First of all, if you had told me that rotation would be that good, this deep into the season, I mean, it's only 5-6 weeks in, but if you told me it was that good, I'd have told you that they would have to have one of the top two or three records in baseball. And we know they got a winning record. They go in to their off day on Thursday, virtual tie for the division lead. But I would have expected even more. And that goes back to your damn bullpen. So that bullpen bites, man. But you want to start with Kyle Hendricks. That's the place to start. Because if he's got anything figured out, he's pitched twice. In down at the minor, quote, minor league rehab assignment for a quote injury, blah, 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 whatever. If he's getting things figured out down there mechanically and he can be productive at the back end of the rotation, even when he comes back, then yes, that's your answer. That's your answer, because for all your belly aching about going and getting somebody right now and Luis Arraez got traded and I said, guys don't get traded this early. Yeah. It ain't happening. You're not going to get your guy this early. So the answer is Kyle Hendricks figures enough out that he can pitch at the back end of your rotation sooner rather than later. And you put some of those other guys that might be productive into your bullpen and lengthen that out.
Okay. So who do you move out of the rotation? Because if you're moving Hendricks back in, well, Hayden Wesneski's done nothing to be knocked out of that rotation. Javier Assad, you just got Steele back. Tyone's been nothing short of sensational. Right. So who's coming out of the rotation?
Well, put it the other way. You know, start it from the other direction. Steele's not coming out of there. Mr. Cy Young finalist guy. He's in there. Imanaga, one of the,
I even mentioned him,
early Cy Young leaders now. Assad has pitched as well as any. He's not going anywhere. Tyone has a contract. He ain't going anywhere. Those are your four that Hendricks joins. And I don't care if you're talking Brown, Wisniewski, whomever, Smiley, whatever your other guy is, it doesn't matter. That guy's now a bullpen guy. That's how it works. That's how it should work if Hendricks can come back and give you five innings of start.
Okay, so the guy that I'm moving is Ben Brown to the seventh, eighth inning. He's more of a two-pitch pitcher. He throws upper 90s. I would put him seventh, eighth inning, and as soon as I felt like that dude can handle the ninth, bam, he's my closer.
Yeah, you know, I hear the way you're thinking, and I'm not going to sit here and say I'm going to argue with you and call it patently wrong or anything like that. I would just stick these guys in the pen, figure out where they match up game to game, and then go from there, because you've had so many. It just, I mean, there have been guys where you thought, okay, this is my guy, Al Zelaya at one point, and then he shits the bed, and then you get these other guys that you think are going well, and then they're not. Just put guys in the best position to succeed based on where you think they match up game to game. The point is, and the idea being, to get as many good arms out there, productive guys out there as you can to lengthen things for you, so that you can cover three or four innings a night.
Okay, so if if a guy like Ben Brown demonstrates that he can handle high leverage innings, I'm not talking about, oh boy, this guy's struggling as a starter in the fifth, we'll go to Ben Brown. I'm talking about, hey, Ben, you got the eighth. Is Hector Neris a long-term fit? And I don't mean beyond this year, but is he your closer? Because that guy drives me insane. I swear to you, I need a cocktail, not a freaking water bottle. I need a freaking drink in my hand.
The thing about Neris is he's got experience there. And we know that the ninth inning is a different animal. So having a guy that has done it, has proven he can do it, if you could find a way to leave him in that role. I mean, I don't know. Do you remember Jose Mesa years ago?
Oh, yeah.
So I covered him when he was with Seattle, and we saw him as a volatile ninth inning guy. He was a closer. He got a lot of saves, but man, he was what they call one of a top step closer. Manager was always on the top step with him because he put guys on base. But most of the time he got the job done, and he pitched for teams that got to the World Series. So I would say if you can, again, keep him in that role, you know, maybe hopefully it's not one run games every time you're sticking him out there, but he's accustomed to that role. If Ben Brown kind of, you know, gets closer to that inner circle of trust, you know, that managers have with their bullpen guys, and he gets higher leverage, and he continues to produce, and he can handle it, give him a little more, and maybe that takes care of itself, but that's going to be an organic process.
Okay, away from pitching, we can get back into it if we need to. The other thing that's really irritating me is the performance of Ian Happ. Ian Happ has been horrific, and I like him. He's a good guy. He's got a .347 on-base percentage. But I'll pull the numbers up. I had them here. I'll pull them back up. His numbers over like a really large sample size since the season was maybe 2 weeks old are so bad. And I know he makes $20 million a year, but it's a sunk cost. I know that he's got a no trade clause. What do you do with Ian Happ? Do you move when Suzuki comes back, maybe as quick as Friday? Do you move Suzuki back to right? You got Bellinger in center or Pete Crow Armstrong, and then Bellinger could be the DH. And then do you bench Ian Happ for at least a couple days and put Tauchman there? He's played much better.
Well, only if I, you know, if I'm the manager and I'm close enough to Happ to think that he could benefit from a couple mental days off, sure. But short of that, no. Short of that, he plays because he's got the track record. I believe in him as a guy who over the course of the season is going to come around. His numbers will eventually be there. And you said it yourself. Suzuki's coming back. I mean, you're going to get your boost. Suzuki will be back in that lineup this weekend. You got Bellinger back the other day. So now you can actually afford to have a little more patience with Happ. And I think he's probably earned it over the course of his career at this point.
Okay, so I'm looking up. Okay, the other guy's Dansby Swanson. His knee is bothering him.
Yeah.
But over the last 25 games, Dansby Swanson, 185, 242, 272 with 30 Ks in 92 at-bats. That is his slash line. That is absolutely horrific. And then if you go back and look at Ian Happ's numbers, they're equally as bad. Yet this team is tied for first. I don't know how.
Pitching. And by the way, everybody's offensive numbers in the game are down this year. Everybody. As of a week ago or so, and it might even be worse now, the average major league batting average was as low as it's been since 1968, the year before they lowered the mound. The year of the pitcher. That's how bad it's been. You expect that it'll even out at some point, maybe as the weather gets better across the country over the summer. Maybe they've fiddled with the balls again. Who knows? But it's down everywhere. Pitching is king. And right now, as you pointed out, nobody's pitching better in their starting rotation than the Cubs. And I think you ride that wave. Yeah. Now, when it comes to, you know, Ian Happ, as long as he's not hurt, I keep playing him. And now, depending on how bad Dansby's knee is, man, maybe it's time to make some adjustments. Because I worry about, with him as much as anything, I worry about what you're going to get in the field, because I think his value is every bit as much, maybe more so, what he brings you as a Gold Glove shortstop than it is as necessarily a big hitting part of your lineup. So, and we know that Nico can play there really well. So if you need to give him some time for the knee, give him some time.
Ian Happ, last 25 games, 169, 295, 225 slash line, 32 Ks and 89 at bats.
Yeah, I know. That's terrible. But there's there is a lot of that going around in the game today. I'm not going to tell you that's great. I'm not going to tell you that's acceptable. But the guy's a veteran. It's not like this guy's a second-year player that you don't know if that's going to be what he is all year. I have a really hard time believing he's going to be that all year. Do you think he's going to – do you think he, that's going to be
– I think he'll be better than that. I do.
Yeah, there's going to come a point where he's on fire. We've seen that before too.
Okay. In terms of third base, Christopher Morel has played better than I thought he would play at third. He has looked better. I know he made a throwing faux pas the other day. He was off balance when he fielded it. He didn't get his feet set, and it skipped by. And it's a one-run game, and the guy gets thrown out trying to go to second for the Padres. I'm like, what are you doing? Ridiculous base-running decision. The Cubs make the play. They win the ballgame. Michael Busch hits a walk-off. There's some good things to like about what you're seeing from their young kids.
Yeah, I agree with that. Talkman has come right back and backed up what he had already done. You didn't know if he was going to be a long-term guy or not. Pretty nice player for you. Pete Carroll Armstrong, second time around. A little more poise, a little more big league look to him. So you got to like all that. Busch, my God, what can you say about this guy? He's fit right in. So there's a lot to like there. Everything about this team, though, you can nitpick all you want about guys in slumps, even deep slumps, what you're going to do for this defensive position or that. But this team all goes back to the bullpen, man. This team should be – I mean, I counted up at least four games that just should have been in the bank wins if not for the bullpen. I mean, just not even close, like not debatable.
Well, like leading 8-0 over the Padres.
Right. And in fairness to the bullpen, it was only a 6-run lead when they got it. But nonetheless, to your point, a lot of these, they've blown. I mean, I just want to get the number right here because I wrote it down somewhere. I think they've got eight blown saves in 19 save tries, man. I think that's the worst, very close to the worst in a major. So 8 blown saves already, and it's not even May 10th.
They should have a comfortable lead in the division.
They should, very much so. It should be at least a 3-game lead, 4-game lead in the division right now. Easy.
All right. Let me also tell you this. When I watched Dylan Cease go 7 innings of one hit, and that was a hit that if he doesn't feel that their infield makes the play, it throws Yan Gomes out, who run faster than him. It makes me insane that the Cubs traded that guy for Jose freaking Quintana.
There you go again.
You realize, I looked this up, he was up in 2019. He made 14 appearances for the Sox. It was 2 years he was in the big leagues, and this goofy front office, we've got to go get Jose Quintana for two of our best prospects.
Well, it's worse than that, Cap, because the reason he was part of that deal was they felt they could so afford to trade him because they never projected him as a starter at that point. They projected him as a bull. They had already punted on his development as a starter and decided that he was going to be a bullpen piece for them if he was going to be any. The best case scenario for them in their minds was that he might be a closer for them someday. So they thought they were trading a relief prospect, a guy that winds up second in Cy Young voting as a starter a couple of years ago. That's the mistake they made there. I don't have any problem with, like, I think even in you, even you in retrospect, because, you know, you used to sing Eloy's praises as a young hitter coming up as a guy that, you know, too much, giving up him was too much for Quintana. I think even you would probably say maybe they were right about Eloy.
They thought he would have injury problems.
Right. And they were right about that. And that so this isn't revisionist history. What we're talking about right now is what was said internally then at the time. It's played out with Eloy. I don't think that you look back on that and say they got screwed on that deal. But they definitely misevaluated Dylan Cease. I don't think there's any question about that.
Oh, my God. They absolutely misevaluated. Yeah. And then the thing that you and I will never agree on, and I got into a yelling match with Theo one day when he's like, man, I keep hearing you and you don't seem to understand that contract allowed us to do other things. And I said, let me know when the pages of the contract walk out there and throw one freaking pitch. That's number one. Number two, the two dudes you signed, you got nothing out of. You got Darvish. He was fine in the pandemic season. He was terrible his first year. And then you traded him. Gone. And Brandon Morrow? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, the Darvish trade and some of those other moves at the time were all about money, pandemic, finances, and all that. But, yeah, I mean, you look at back at the Quintana trade, though, and I will defend Theo on that one in terms of that contract. That was a highly valuable contract for who that pitcher was in the moment of that trade. He did not perform like the pitcher he was.
I could have told you that. I said, screamed that at you at Wrigley Field. I watch the White Sox. I love baseball. That dude can't pitch in this situation. And I was right.
Well, if you're talking about going to Wrigley in the bigger pressure cooker, you're right. But he's pitching for the Mets now. I watched him pitch well for them. I don't know. I haven't followed him. I don't know what he's doing this season, but seemed like he was doing pretty well in New York. So go figure. He had some issues that I think were not about pressure. He just didn't perform. Plus, your whole thing, if I remember right, and the reason you called him a Buick is because you wanted Verlander.
Correct.
And those were two different decisions that they made at the time. They didn't believe necessarily in Verlander's long-term health or viability because they didn't know what was the matter with him, with his production falling off. The other thing is, when he went to Houston, he went to exactly the right place because they had a more sophisticated pitching infrastructure that could get in there and help solve him, some of the things that were going on at the time. If he goes to the Cubs in that deal, maybe he doesn't get the improvement that he saw in Houston. Maybe he doesn't become the guy he was in Houston. And maybe he leaves the Cubs after a year or two and then becomes that guy. So it might not have worked out even had they gotten him.
Maybe. Jose Quintana is 1-3 with a 5.20 ERA and a 1.54 whip.
Man, that's got to be 6-something when I haven't seen him.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Not good. The Cardinals lost Wilson Contreras.
Oh, that's brutal.
And so a dear friend of mine, one of my closest friends, just talked to Wilson. He had successful surgery. He's out 6 to 8 weeks. He said, dude, how do you get hit by a bat? He said,
I'll tell you that.
The coaching staff told me to move closer so that the lower pitches wouldn't hit the dirt.
Do you remember when?
Are you kidding?
Do you remember the talk when he first went over to St. Louis about all the work? Remember, we had Derek Gould on the podcast, and he was talking about all the work they did in spring training with him, that they had this idea, this secret that was going to make him better than what they had seen in Chicago. That was the key to the whole thing, is moving him up, which is a trend in the game, right? It's about framing pitches, too. It's about you get more calls. In theory, and I guess the analytics bear it out, when the catcher's closer and can frame that pitch closer to the plate. Well, you know, talking to some people around the team I cover now, they do the same thing. But the thing, what what goes into that is the evaluation of each hitter too.
Yeah.
Some of them are further back in the box and some of them have a swing plane that is more conducive to catcher's interference calls and hitting, if not the glove, even the arm, like we saw. And JD Martinez is one of those guys. It was just a brutal confluence of events, of kind of trends in the game too. And I just hate to see it. I mean, you and I love Wilson. I mean, he's what a good human being and one of our favorites. And I was in pain watching that last night. But it's one of those things that ticks me off just because of these guys overthinking the damn game.
Agreed.
You know, if it's a strike, it's a strike. Don't frame it. You know, don't just quit overdoing this crap, right? Just play the frickin' game.
Yeah, I completely agree. The Cardinals look terrible.
Oh, man.
Paul Goldschmidt looks lost.
Yeah.
Did I
not say this going into the season?
You did. So how do you break down the division now? Are the Cubs, they are in Vegas, they are the betting favorite.
I would say and only because I don't have faith that Milwaukee has as much as it's had in recent years, because they're really good, they're very young. They don't have Corbin Burns anymore. They don't have Josh Hader anymore, but they have enough to get it done. They're just very, very young. That said, the Cubs have deeper starting pitching and more veterans on that team that have done it before. I got to say the Cubs are the favorite as you break it down now. The Reds are showing their youth in a big way right now. They were another team that, what I say when the season started with them, they're volatile. I said they could win 75 games or 95 games because they're so young. Well, they're in a stretch right now, kind of similar to the Cubs, because the divisions tend to kind of follow similar schedules. A lot of the Padres, a lot of the Dodgers, Texas, Arizona, 6 weeks of nothing but teams that are considered playoff contenders or that just were in the World Series. And it hasn't looked pretty. They've lost 8 straight games as we sit here talking right now. And now they go out to the West Coast for 10. So if they don't at least keep it, you know, 500 on that trip, and 4 of those games are against the Dodgers, then they could bury themselves before they get to June. So you go back and look at it. I don't think the Pirates have enough. And you just mentioned the Cardinals. I didn't think they had enough when the season started. So it's Cubs and the Brewers as we sit here right now. And that could change.
All right. Before I let you go,
bullpens, boy, they'll bite you in the ass.
They're talking about, Tanner Scott, but he walks a lot of guys too.
Anybody you get right now, you know, we talked about this, right? We talked about this before the podcast. So we talked about it on the last podcast. Go call somebody right now. Okay, well, the Padres pulled off a deal, right? Because the Marlins decided to sell. But I just talked to an executive today, as a matter of fact, who said that just because that happened doesn't mean it's opening up a lot of trades across baseball. And the other thing is, some people have evaluated that as maybe even an overpay for Arias. And that's what I told you earlier is, and this guy concurred with my breakdown of this. You got to pay a lot to go get a guy right now. If you want a guy right now, because there's no market.
Or he's not that good.
Or there's some kind of flaw, right? Some kind of serious flaw. But you still probably have to pay a lot for him because, again, the team that's going to give him up, they got to have a reason to give him up. If they don't have 2 or 3 teams fighting over him, telling you, you know, allowing you to play one off the other to drive the price up. If there's no market way to drive the price up, then you're going to have to come in extra strong because you're going to have to beat whatever they imagine the best price for him is going to be. And so that's why it's so hard to make these deals. That's why they hardly ever get done. And who did the deal? The guy that might be the most aggressive head of baseball operations for any team, the guy in San Diego.
Yeah, he's probably the most aggressive I have ever seen. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, Gordon, have a great rest of your day. Paul Skeens.
Yes.
Going to pitch against the Cubs on Saturday. His much more famous significant other, Livy Dunn.
Livy Dunn, yes.
Yeah, they just posted. I just saw it now on Instagram. They just posted a video. We're in Pittsburgh. We just got here. Yeah. So
the only problem with her is she calls it the MLB.
Right.
Can't do that. That's a cardinal sin. You can't do that. She's got to learn that. If
my boyfriend pitches in the MLB. No, your boyfriend pitches in Major League Baseball.
Major League Baseball. And that's going to be fun to watch, man.
One of the top scouts for the Pirates was quoted today. It said, this dude's once in a decade. He's that good.
Yeah, they're comparing him to Mark Pryor when he came out, and we know what was said about him big time. And Steven Strasburg, those are the types of guys. I'm really anxious to see what he looks like. He was just drafted last year, man.
Crazy.
I know.
Well, we'll see. I would think Cade Horton, who's now at AAA and is throwing the ball well, I would think he'll be up this year. I would think Matt Shaw has a chance.
Well, if the bullpen keeps pitching the way it is.
Yeah, but if you could get Cade Horton into your back end in August, late July, that's what Council did with Corbin Burnes and Brandon Woodruff. He used them in the pen to acclimate him to the big leagues.
You know, that's, you know, David Price pitched in a World Series.
As a closer.
As a bullpen guy, as a weapon for that team.
Right.
That was
big for Joe Maddon.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Gordon, have a great rest of your day, man.
All right, you too, man.
All right. That's my partner. That's the great Gordon Wittenmeyer. That's a wrap for another edition of our Cubs Recap Podcast, a presentation of our Recap YouTube channel. Subscribe, click that little bell. You'll never miss any of our content. You'll get alerts, and you can get it audio only everywhere you get your favorite podcast. For Gordon, I'm Cap. Have a great rest of your day. Fly the W and take that.